This week on the Boag World Show, we're joined by Jonathan Stark to discuss how to nurture repeat business. Season 12 of the Boag World Show is sponsored by Lynda.com, Template Monster, and all of the 404 error pages out there. Welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. I'm Paul Boag, you're listening to episode 11 of season 12 of the show. And joining me today is Marcus Lillington and Jonathan Stark. Hello guys.
Hello.
Hello.
It's good to have you both on the show. Even Marcus, even you Marcus, it's good to have you here. I never welcome you. I always welcome the guest, and I feel that you're missing out as a result.
I'm used to it, Paul. I'm so used to being treated badly, I don't even notice anymore.
It's like an abused spouse that's probably
really
bad.
Like that comparison.
You don't like the idea of being a spouse to me or abused, which is the problem?
Well, spouse to you far more, obviously.
Fair enough. Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Good. It's starting off kind of dark, aren't we?
Well, yeah, that's just the way today's going to go, I can tell.
I get you. No, I'm doing great. It is the most beautiful day here that you can imagine.
Where are you again?
I am in lovely Providence, Rhode Island, which is near Boston.
Oh, nice. Well, no, it wouldn't appeal to me.
No? Why not?
No. I like where I live.
There's no other part of the
RV. Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, I like, but it's a beautiful day here too. July in England is probably the best month.
Pretty much the only month, but it's nice.
It is. It's lovely.
So, Jonathan, it has been a while since we've had you on the show. When was the last time? What were you on last talking about? Remind me.
We talked about, ostensibly, I was on to talk about mobile, mobile web. And we did a bunch of talking also about more about how I run my firm and not doing hourly billing and
value based pricing. That was it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Even I remember that, Paul.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but I've had a very busy day. I've got a new toy to play with, and it's taken up a lot of time.
A new toy? More gadgets, yeah. Paul?
Well, yeah, I'm doing an increasing amount of video.
Right.
And I've been shooting it on a camcorder that I bought for a couple of hundred quid because I was tight. And I thought, it's about time now, I'm a grown-up. And so I've got a Canon 600D. Which is a lovely SLR camera that also can do nice video recording. So that's what I've been up to, which is cool.
Very nice. I've been out to lunch with my wife today.
Oh, yes, that was today, wasn't it?
It was, and very nice, yes. I had one of the nicest desserts I've had in years.
Ooh, what was it?
It was a raspberry millefeuille, or however you pronounce it, you know, like layers of flaky pastry with cream and raspberries in kind of layers. Yeah. Fantastic.
See, Mr. American Jonathan, we do have decent food in Britain.
Jeez. I had a hard-boiled egg. Now I'm hungry again.
It is 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm struggling to stay awake, I have to say. So you might have to shout every now and then.
Oh, this is going to be a good show then. So what are you up to these days, Jonathan? You still... tell people what your job is.
I am a mobile strategy consultant, and I help basically consumer brands make the transition from the desktop era thinking to mobile first style thinking.
Ooh. Hey, have you read a book I've just finished called The Best Interface is No Interface?
I have not.
You've so got to get it.
Yeah, that's right up my alley.
It's really good. I mean, it's almost... it's why I like it is because the guy... should have been British. He's not. He's from the States. But he's just so sarcastic and rude the whole way through that I just love it. But no, he's talking about the kind of the post-GUI world, you know, where so you have a mobile app. I mean, for example, one of the ones he mentions is the app Moves, which you just kind of, you know, you set it up and then it just sits in your back pocket and gets on with it without you having to launch the app the whole time.
Sure.
And it, you know, he talks about sensors and kind of computers gathering data and that kind of stuff. He's so funny about car manufacturers and about how they started moving to mobile apps. You know, and so there is now a mobile app that allows you to open your car door. So instead of just getting a key out, putting a key in, turning the key and being done, you now have to get out your mobile phone, swipe to unlock it, hit the button to go to the home screen, find the appropriate app, launch the appropriate app, find the unlock button, swipe the unlock button, and then you can get in your car. And that's progress, apparently.
Well, that's the problem we're having with mobile payments, which is mobile payments haven't created a compelling user experience compared to using a credit card.
No. I mean, it's really interesting because we've just got, literally, we've just got Apple Pay here in the UK. Mm-hmm. And I had a moment of being excited about it. And then I realized, well, actually, it's easier just to, you know, wave my credit card over a terminal as to wave a phone that I could then drop. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. I've been studying it for years. It's frustrating because I feel like there have been some examples of mobile payments that are amazing.
Square did some interesting stuff, didn't they?
Yeah, that Square checkout thing where you just walk in and pay with your face was genius, but yeah. It didn't catch on.
No, weird. Pay with your face, Marcus.
That's what it needs to be like.
Yeah, I think you need to explain that because Marcus has got images of running his face over a credit card reader now.
You're putting your face.
I mean, Marcus is.
Sorry, carry on.
Marcus is used to paying with his good looks, right?
Absolutely. My whole life.
Yeah, so basically, if you imagine a Starbucks-type scenario, you know, you walk into a coffee shop, you've got the Starbucks application on your phone. They've got a Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi detects your phone. It knows who you are. It knows your identity. And they have a corresponding application on their register. This is the part that's missing right now. That shows the face of everybody who's wandering around inside the store on the Wi-Fi. So as you walk up to the counter, you say, hey, I'd like a venti Pike Place. And they say, what's your name? And I say, John. And they correspond that to my face on the thing and just automatically gets charged to my account. Like, I can already pay with my phone at Starbucks, but I have to take it out. I have to scan it on the barcode scanner, which isn't horrible. And it's just enough better than a credit card that I do that one because of the loyalty points and all that. But the NFC stuff is just terrible. So,
and it would be okay if we could get rid of the credit card. Do you know what I mean? If you could get rid of the wallet and you just carry your phone, then there's an advantage to that. But the reality is not everywhere's going to take this anyway. So you're still going to end up carrying your credit card around. So what's the point, really? And yeah, like you say, it's not as slick as it could be. That's actually the example you've just given with Square was one of the ones that was in this No Interface book. So yeah, I think you ought to check it out. You'll like it. It's good.
Who wrote that book?
He's got an amazing name. Golden...
Krishna.
Golden Krishna, yeah.
Good grief.
I know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just gave... I will read it. It's right up my alley. I just gave the keynote at the Future Insights Conference, and the title was The Browser is Dead.
Ah.
And for a web developer to give a keynote to a room full of web developers about that is... it's the same concept. It's like you need to program across devices. The rectangle of the browser window is just one little marginalized piece of a much bigger picture that we could all be taking advantage of if we just make our thinking a little bit bigger.
See, that's so funny. What I've been doing, you know, I've been playing with my new toy, my new camera. I've been recording a video I've titled it, If You Own a Hammer, Everything Looks Like a Nail. Mm-hmm. And it's to say, and basically I'm arguing that because of our background in web design, when we think user experience, we think websites, because that's what we know. You know, that is the hammer that we have. We've spent years perfecting our skills in that area, and so that's where we think. But actually, there's a whole ecosystem of other things that are part of the user experience that we need to get into. So, yeah,
I could not agree more.
I'm so into this at the moment. Like, have you seen Disney's new Magic Band?
Yeah, I've been there. I've used it.
Oh, have
it's
you?
Amazing.
Is it good?
No, it's amazing.
Because I'm going to California. Do you know if they have it at both parks?
I don't know the answer to that. I was at Orlando, and it is jaw-dropping.
Wonderful.
It's an amazing user experience. It's what user experience, you know, air quotes, is going to... That's the job of using... What am I trying to say? I think that the user experience title or the person who does that should be doing stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's a real user experience.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible. So if you don't know, Marcus, so we haven't talked about this before, have we?
Or we am I have, imagining? But I'm really we struggling have. To remember what it is. Tell me again.
So it's a band you wear, and it then can kind of controls the entire, almost your entire experience. So things like, you know, no turnstiles anymore. You just kind of go and you know, buzz yourself in with your band, basically. You put your band up against it. And it, you know, identifies you. But also you can go to a restaurant and you could pre-order for the restaurant your food and when you want to go there. And then you go to the restaurant and they know you as you walk up because they've got they've detected you coming up with your band on. And then you can go sit anywhere you want in the restaurant and they know your physical location in the restaurant so that they can come over to you and give you your food without having to, you know, just by magic, it kind of just appears. But also things like, isn't it something to do with like queuing for rides and stuff like that, Jonathan?
Yeah, it's the thing that's amazing about it is woven into every aspect you can think of about the park experience.
Okay.
So it's just a simple little piece of technology that you wear. It's like a rubberized, comfortable, smart-looking... colorful band that fits everything from a 2-year-old to a grown adult. It's comfortable. It doesn't get messed up, and it's just a simple RFID chip that's broadcasting an ID that it knows who is broadcasting. It knows who this is attached to. You can use it to unlock your hotel room door. You can use it to pay just about anywhere. I counted about 20, at least 20 systems that I could see that they must have done some serious background integration, so like server-side integration between things like a bunch of different payment processors, different POSs, a bunch of different hotel properties, the park itself, getting into the park, on and on and on and on. I'm not sure. It doesn't notify you or anything like that. It's just broadcasting your ID as you walk around. And so you know full well that they are also doing sort of... I mean, it's like Google Analytics for the Earth.
Yeah.
Or for the park. So they can track where you go around the park, and they can see if there are a whole bunch of people clustered up around whatever, Space Mountain, then they can send a push notification to the application that's on your phone that says, hey, there's no lines over at, I don't know, one of the other rides.
Yeah. You must have been the most boring dad in the world that day because you were just going around counting systems and integration points. Your kids must have loved you.
I like to think I hide that from them, but I'm sure I'm not.
Anyway, we ought to move on. I've got to talk about sponsors before we get into today's discussion. I just quickly want to mention Template Monster because they've been so supportive of the show for so long now. They're the community that provides a lot of the questions that we cover, and they've been supporting us through the transcriptions and that kind of stuff. Last week I mentioned Monstroid just because it sounded cool. And I do want to just mention it again because I don't think necessarily... I personally communicated the thing that I think is most cool about this. And Template Monster haven't asked me to push this thing, but I think it's really cool. Because what Monstroid is basically is like a template on steroids, a WordPress template. So, but it kind of strikes a sweet spot between... Squarespace, you know, where you've got it's really, really easy to use. You can drag stuff around, you can move things about. It's very simple, nice user interface. But the trouble with Squarespace is it's quite restrictive, and it has to be hosted on their server and that kind of stuff. So it's kind of strikes a balance between the ease of use of Squarespace, but the power and the flexibility that comes with WordPress. So it's a hugely flexible WordPress template system that allows you to manage layouts in a very modular way. It's got lots of plugins that integrate into it, but only loads of plugins that you actually are using rather than, you know, all them all in one go, like Jetpack used to do, I think, was one example of that. So it's really well optimized. It's super fast. It integrates with WooCommerce, and they've got great support around it. Now, it's only $79, which just blows my mind away. I can't wait to get my hands on it and give it a go. If you want to try it out yourself, by the time this podcast comes out, it will be available for you to have a play with, and you can do that by going to boagworld.com/monstroid, MONSTROID. So, although it's great to spend loads of time talking about the things, what is it with you, Jonathan? We get you on the show to talk about one thing, and we end up talking about something completely different.
I'm scintillating.
Is that what it is?
Or distracting, one of the two.
Yeah, my superpower is tangents.
That would be an awesome superpower.
Yep, I spend too much time within your sphere then, because I'm always going off on tangents. To the point that it annoys the hell out of me. I had just before we do get going.
You're about to go off on a tangent, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm going back to the previous subject of good usability. And it's a bit of I'm throwing a spanner in the works, really. When we finished eating lunch earlier, I asked for the bill. Bill came. And I looked at my wallet and I thought, I've got enough cash for this. So I put the cash, and a round number made up perfect amount of tip. And we got up and we walked out.
Mm.
Fantastic usability. Cash.
But, yes, if you've got the right amount of it.
Yeah, I know. Obviously, I had to get that. But it's just that for that particular experience, I didn't have to wait for them to come back with the machine. And
There is virtual equivalents of that. For example, there are certain places like where you can sit at the table and you can pay using PayPal.
Really?
So Prezzo's, you can do that. I think it's Prezzo's, where you basically open their app, you pay for the meal. In fact, you open the PayPal app, and then you walk out, which is really weird.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the same. The waitress kind of was coming up with the card reader machine. I'm saying, pay cash, it's in there, keep the change.
Yeah, you're just so retro.
Yeah, it was kind of...
It's a fair point.
Yeah.
I think OpenTable, I don't know if they launched it or they were just planning it, but OpenTable, which is that service that allows you to reserve a table at a restaurant, you know, like make a reservation, they were talking about also being able to pay using that same system.
Yeah.
So it'd be the same concept.
Yeah, which would be very cool. I like, you see, I've just discovered the wonderfuls, because I live in the middle of nowhere, the joys of ordering takeaway on an app. So, we've now got a takeaway place in Blandford that accepts, you know, orders online. And that's just wonderful, because I don't need to worry about whether I've got enough cash in the house to pay for my takeaway now. It's all just done. It's great. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Yep.
Well, and I don't have to talk to people, which is always a bonus.
Well, it's not fun to, and where we are, if I want to order a pizza from my favorite mom and pop pizza place, every time I call them, I have to tell them my phone number and my address and read my credit card number to them over the phone repeatedly.
Yeah.
They even call me back sometimes because they wrote it down wrong.
Yeah.
Which they shouldn't even be writing it down. So, I mean, anyway.
Yes.
There are parts that can be fixed, but cash is tough to beat.
Right, come on, move on. Let's do.
It was
my fault, and I'm apologising now. What are we talking about today, Paul?
It's my in subject at the moment, so I could have carried on about that forever. But what we're supposed to be talking about today is nurturing repeat business. Because Jonathan, I don't know whether we haven't explained what you're doing on the show. But basically, we're doing a whole series on running your web design business or digital business or whatever you want to call it these days. And we're covering a whole load of different areas. And we've got to the idea of nurturing nurturing repeat business? And we got some really good questions on this one. So I'm quite interested to go through these and get everybody's opinion on this. First one that I liked is, how do you keep in contact with clients without resorting to emailing them, asking them if they have any new business? So, you know, because that's a bit obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So what other ways are, how do you, I mean, do you do anything like a newsletter, or do you ring up clients on a regular basis? How do you do it, Jonathan?
I do have a newsletter, but like probably a lot of people, I'm not good about keeping up with it. And I don't really have clients on it. It's more developers, web developer type people on that list.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a really easy way to do this, and
okay.
it works great. And the trick is, really, it's not a trick. It's just as you're going through your feeds every day, you're listening to your podcasts, mm-hmm. or you're going down your RSS feeds, or you're on Twitter or wherever, and you're looking for articles. You know, people probably spend half an hour, who knows how much time every day looking at articles or getting emails with mailing us, you know, so we're constantly filtering all these articles through our brain, and we're deciding as we look at them whether or not they'd be interesting for us to read. We're constantly making this decision. The thing that if you shift your thinking to also think, while you're looking at this gigantic stream of links to read, do I know anyone who would be interested in any of these?
Yeah.
And if you just grab one of those links, you say, you know what, that guy I met from Target at that last conference would really be into this. I remember we had a conversation about whatever, Disney Magic Band, and I know that he would really dig this. Just say, hey man, long time no talk, saw this, thought of you, cheers.
Yeah.
And if you do one of those a day, you will be slammed with business.
Mm. It's really, I couldn't agree more. You know, that's exactly the kind of approach that I take of just going, hey, check this out. This might be of interest to you. It's brilliant. But I can guarantee Marcus doesn't do it that way.
I don't keep in touch with old clients. No, I do.
Oh, you're going to be painful. This is going to be painful. Yes, you do, Marcus.
I know you do. Yes, I do.
You've got this kind of natural ability just to kind of make small talk with people and chat and stuff. You're like a proper human being.
Mm.
How do you do that?
I can't tell you that, Paul. I'd have to kill you.
No, seriously, how? What? I mean, because if you're not, you know, with what we've just described, there's a specific reason for going to someone, a specific thing that you're saying. You know, how do you do it? Do you talk to people about their kids?
Well, for one, in the last, I don't know, 15 years of doing this, probably more than that now, I've only kind of thought, you know what, I really need to kind of be talking to people more because we haven't got enough business, probably two or three times in all that time. So it's not something that I worry about and think, God, I must be speaking to people more. I'm more concerned that I don't speak to them enough and I'm not doing the positive things that you two are talking about. I do a bit, but I just find myself kind of run away with whatever we're working on. It's, you know, proposals come through, or RFPs come through the door all the time. I'm responding to them, and they're usually connected to a client that we've worked with, either them directly or somebody's made a recommendation, and then I will make a I'll often make contact with people to say thanks very much for recommending us to whoever,
right?
And that's a reason to make contact. I do like to phone people up in those, you know, sending someone an email to say is there any work coming up is nowhere near as or it's a lot more ignorable than phoning somebody up and saying it's been a long time. We've been working on X, Y, and Z. You might want to have a look at that. Is there anything in the pipeline for you? I think if you're having a conversation, it's a much nicer way to interact with people than via email.
Yeah. It's scarier as well.
And takes more effort. But then I think the more effort you put in, the more you get back. Well, that sounded really cliched, but I think it's true.
Well, it's like, do you remember, Jonathan, we had Dan James from Silver Orange on? when we were talking about winning work. And, you know, he will actually kind of make up almost like gift baskets for clients, you know, potential clients. And hey, well, that brings me on to another question, actually, that I've just remembered. Is it okay to buy clients thank you presents for being a customer, or does it come across as bribery? I liked that one.
That's in very, very rare situations, I have sent like a Christmas type of holiday gift to either to like an entire office, like, you know, like a fruit basket or something, or like a big thing of assorted coffees that everybody can share. But there have been times when I have clicked so tightly with a long-term consulting client, because most of my clients, I don't do dev work hardly at all anymore. Mm. I'm mostly giving people advice and helping them with strategy and really directing their business at the highest level of the organization. So when it's great, you really, really click with these people and just hang out. And, you know, I have this one client that used to play practical jokes on everybody when they'd be on site. And one time somebody hid under a desk and waited for me to sit down at the desk and like jumped out at me. And there were a whole bunch of people standing outside the door filming my reaction. And I like screamed like a girl, the whole thing. And those guys I sent specific like Christmas presents, but they sent them to me too. It was like, we were just like close.
Yeah.
So it think
moves
if it's
beyond
not
being
awkward,
a client supplier relationship.
Yeah. I'm still friends with these people and we haven't worked together in years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I do think it's a fine line though. It's a little, especially if you're sending it to the person who, like the buyer, but not the owner.
Yeah.
Cause yeah. it's like these conferences where it's like, get a free iPod if you come to this conference, if you sign up for this conference by X. The reason that works is because the boss is paying for the conference and the person who goes gets the iPad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's also somewhat dependent on sector a little bit as well, because we've had clients who work in sectors where that is perfectly acceptable, and we've had clients that have to actually refuse things, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, I worry about this, but therefore we've kind of taken the attitude of we tend not to buy presents for pretty much. I can only think of one that we regularly buy for. And that's because, again, very close relationship. But I worry because in certain sectors, it's the norm to buy all your clients, you know, a bottle of scotch or whatever. That's what you do. Everybody does it, and that's what you do. Unless it's public sector and you're not allowed to, all that kind of thing. So I worry that we've got clients out there thinking we're tight, and it's like, well, where's my present kind of thing?
Yeah.
I don't do anything about it. I don't worry that much, obviously.
I would say a good rule of thumb is if you're asking yourself whether or not it's appropriate, you probably shouldn't do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough comment, isn't it? Okay.
There was one other thing about sending out emails that Marcus started to bring up, which is probably worth mentioning because I think it's really helpful for people who are having a tough cash flow period, is if you do need to send out, you know, if you need to drum up some work real quickly, you can send out an email that says something along the lines of, hey, I just wanted to touch base. Something fell out of my schedule unexpectedly, and I've got next week free. I don't know if there's anything that you need worked on, but if you get back to me within 24 hours, I can put you on the calendar for next week.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think, you know, it's that kind of honest approach, isn't it?
That's worked for me with existing clients who have kind of support agreements with us. Mm. Kind of that, you know, like, and I've used very, very similar kind of wording, kind of like, you know, we suddenly find ourselves with a gap in our schedule. Have you got anything coming up? But that's only ever worked for people we work with, you know, all the time, rather than sort of people, not out of the blue, not completely cold clients, but say somebody we did a one-off project for 5 years ago. That's never worked for me doing that, but maybe it does for some people.
Yeah. I mean, I've I've had it work even in the little short time I've been in business, but obviously those clients aren't very old. Mm. But clients where I've finished work and, you know, moved on, and then I've had something drop out, and I thought, oh, I wonder whether they'd be interested in me doing something, and they were. But then I kind of do weird stuff as well, so maybe not the best example. Weird
the other stuff. The other thing that's in play here is that, you know, Mark has talked about all these RFPs coming in and devoting a lot of time to that. And it's just way easier to sell stuff to people who are past clients than it is to sell stuff to new prospects. So if you're going to spend, if you've got an hour to spend, spend it pinging old clients and not prospecting for new ones.
Yeah, which is really good advice. So how, if we're not buying our clients big presents, how do we go about making them feel special so that they come back in the future? I mean, yeah, kind of keeping in the loop, showing them that you're thinking about them by sending you them articles and that kind of thing. But is there anything else we can do?
Are you talking about past clients who are not in an active project with you?
Or both, really. Because I mean, obviously those that you're in an active project with, it's, you've got to do good work, you know, it's about the quality of the work, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah. My advice or my experience here is probably a little bit, less useful for most of the audience. So my main service is a monthly retainer agreement that's open-ended.
Okay.
So it's just like an infinite project. So there's not like a delivery and then, you know, okay, great, thanks, bye. It's like if I continue delivering ROI, they're never going to get rid of me.
Right. And,
which has been the case. The only time I ever have stopped working with a retainer client is because I stopped doing it because, you know, whatever. I wanted to do less travel because we had a baby or whatever it was.
I'm fascinated by this. It's a tangent time. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about how that works for you. So you say you've got open-ended retainers with clients. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So for X number of hours or what?
Oh,
how does that operate?
So for X number of dollars per month, they get access to me in a variety of levels.
Okay.
So it's not about what I'm going to do. It's not about my labor or my hours. It's about them having very quick access to my expertise so that they can make a strategic or tactical decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically it's kind of, if you were going to dumb it down, it's like they pay me so they can pick my brain whenever they want.
Yeah. That's similar. I do a similar thing with a mentorship scheme that I offer. But instead of it being a monthly fee, they buy X number of hours over a period of a year. I think I prefer your approach.
Yeah, well, the nice thing about my approach is I don't have to track my hours.
No, which is really good.
Yeah, but this, tracking the hours sends the wrong message. I mean, I realize that a month is just another arbitrary period of time, but it makes a big mental difference because it's blurry enough that everyone starts caring about the right thing and not the wrong thing.
Yeah, like, yeah, I know what you mean.
So, yeah, so, you know, but you have to be very careful because my offer is that, you know, you get 24/7, you know, access to me via chat, email, phone, whatever. I'll get back to you within whatever the agreed upon time is, usually at my favorite price point, which is the highest one. I'll get back to them within 90 minutes during business hours or the next day if it's after business hours. And they can email me or they can contact me as much as they want. And usually when people hear that, they panic. They're like, oh, but you'll never, you know, they take my monthly rate, they divide it by the number of hours in a month, and they think you're going to make $5 an hour. But it's never what happens because if you're working with the right kind of people, which is an important thing to point out, you have to work with the right kind of people. They are busy and they do not want to be on the phone with you every day, all day.
No, absolutely not. And there's a big difference, you know, when they're essentially paying for your knowledge rather than you to sit down. It's not like you're sitting down for an 8-hour day and writing a big document for them or whatever.
Correct.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. It's interesting. Sorry, that was a complete tangent. I was just interested in how that worked. Marcus, is there kind of other ways that you try and make clients feel valued?
Yes, I try and get into the same room as them on a reasonably regular basis, which might be every 2 years, but at least, basically face-to-face, then you can have lunch and, you know, buy people lunch. We're back to bribery again, aren't we? But, you know, I think people like having lunch and having a chat and basically getting together, face-to-face stuff. That's valuable.
That is one thing that I think we miss out a little bit, which since Headscape moved to Winchester, is they did like to come to the barn, didn't they? People like a day out in the country.
People like to come to Winchester too. Definitely.
Oh, do they?
Yeah, they love it. Well, it's a fantastic city, so yeah. And there's many places to go and many things to see. So no, I'm actually writing it into project specs now. Basically, that, you know, there will be. There will be a project day where the client team has to come and spend a day with us, normally sort of two-thirds of the way through the project. Because it's really valuable to get everyone around the table rather than, you know, kind of electronic methods of communication. But equally, they get a chance to have a nice day out with us. So that's it.
Yeah, because there is this perception, you know, generally within our industry, we go to our clients. But I think quite a lot of clients like to escape their offices for a while.
They do, definitely.
And I think sometimes it can be more productive as well. I mean, certainly when you're kind of working, I was talking to Chris, who was doing some site work with a client where there was a group of people that were working with Headscape. But for some reason, they couldn't do it on their own premises. So it ended up happening at a third party location. And I think it worked a lot better, actually, because they weren't constantly interrupted. You know, the phone wasn't ringing. There wasn't the temptation of normal work. Mm-hmm. And so things were a lot more productive. So, yeah, it's good.
Field trip, absolutely,
which is always good. Right, let's pick another question. It would be great to get a regular revenue stream from some clients, but is that possible when you just build websites for people? So this is really, this is Marcus, because neither myself nor Jonathan really do that anymore. Mm-hmm. We get a regular income from clients by consulting with them and allowing them access to our huge brains. How do you, as someone with only a little brain, manage to get regular income from clients?
The question is it possible?
Yeah.
The answer is yes.
And that, you're not going to go any further.
I've only got a small brain, so I can't expand upon that at all.
I've got a question for Marcus. I know at one time you offered like post-delivery maintenance plans.
Yes.
Do you still do that?
We do. We're very specific about them and about what they are. I think there is an expectation amongst some clients that, 'cause I get asked this question, sort of, you know, how much is the support going to be? What percentage of the value of the project and all that kind of thing? I'm like, well, you know, if you don't want us to support you or you don't want to work with us after the project, you don't have to. There's no hard and fast buy-in. We offer, very similar to what Paul was saying about his mentoring, we offer a kind of bundle of hours. And that could be a lot of hours. It doesn't matter, actually, the amount, because basically there's no time limit to them. They don't run out after a year or whatever. It's effectively just a kind of a bunch of hours that you can use whenever you want, and when they've run out, well, you can buy some more hours. And it very kind of relaxed, loose agreement like that, I've found that clients like, and they don't get too worried about, you know, oh, how much am I spending, or I'm going to make sure I spend my budget and all this kind of thing. It's just it focuses on what they want to do with the site and what they want to work with us to make the site better, rather than you know, how much they're spending, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So yes, that's effectively how we do it. It is a support / maintenance / new work agreement, but it's quite loose, and it's not, you know, we don't sort of insist upon anything at all. So yeah, it works quite nicely. People like
I think
that.
There's also a value of the way that you talk to clients and the way that you present what you do, I think makes a big difference in terms of regular revenue from them. So, you know, when I was in the situation of building websites, I would always try and talk to clients about, okay, this is phase one. This, you know, and what are we going to be doing next? What's the next step when this is finished? So that you're kind of, because that's the way, you know, they should be thinking about their projects. It's not just a sales technique to get regular income. They should be seeing their websites as something that needs to evolve and something that needs to mature over time. So they need to be continually, working on it. So just simply talking like that and explaining that to them, rather than just fixating on this is one fixed project that, you know, we must get this delivered and then we're done kind of thing. If you can move away from that model, then I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah, the students in my coaching program, many of them are web developers. And what I try to get them to focus on is not the deliverable of the website itself. Like, okay, here's the navigation the way you wanted it, and the logo is the size that you wanted, and now we're done. It's more about why are we building this website, or why are we redesigning this website? What's the goal of it? And that goal is never going to go away. So when there's going to be probably a big delivery at some point, if you're doing a huge redesign, like a mobile redesign, or you're doing a responsive rebuild from scratch or something like that. But if you think a little more broadly about your skill set and what value you're actually delivering to your customers, you could easily do like some of the students do, where they say, okay, now that we've got the big release out, now let's do 3 months of A/B testing to optimize the sales funnel, or the shopping cart, or let's start taking create a content marketing approach where we take your blog posts and we repurpose them as podcasts, or we send them out as emails, and maybe we put one of those hideous dialogues to grab somebody's email address on the homepage, or whatever. whatever the goal of the website is, keep getting it. Keep making it better at achieving that goal, and that will they'll pay you forever if you can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that does come down to clearly defining the goal, which is, it's one of the first things you should be doing as a web designer anyway.
Yeah, you can't succeed if you don't know what the goal is.
Yes, absolutely.
You can only fail.
We're back to the darkness again.
Yeah, exactly. We've come full circle.
Exactly.
I've lost my notes. Here we go. Right. So here's a good question. If a client turns around to you, and obviously, Jonathan, this never happens to you, and Marcus, obviously, it never happens to Headscape. But theoretically, if a client turned around to you and said, we're moving on, we want to go somewhere else, is there any point in trying to persuade them otherwise? And if there is, how do you do that?
Absolutely no point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Wish them well.
Exactly. This comes up relatively regularly when people ask me what to do when they submitted a proposal and it got rejected. So somebody got picked instead of them, and they know who got picked, and they know the projects, they know they're better than the other, at least they think that they're better than the other company.
Yeah.
And there's this like bitterness. They want to email. Well, good luck with that. Those guys are going to ruin your website or whatever. So definitely you have to stay super far away from sour grapes, because if you're actually right and the project is a failure, and you gracefully say, that's cool, let me know how it goes. I'll check in 6 months and make sure you're all set, or whatever. Just be whatever the situation is, just be super professional and to move on to the next thing. And it'll make you look like you're a little bit more in demand and not as desperate, which hopefully is true. If things do go belly up, then hopefully you'll be the first person they think of.
I mean, would you go as far as kind of following up on that and, you know, asking them how the project goes further down the line? You know, 4 months later or whatever, nothing's happened. Would you contact them?
Sure.
Yeah. I do.
And I would.
Do you really, Marcus?
Yes, I really do.
And has that actually helped?
Usually. I mean, it's quite interesting what you were saying there, Jonathan, about the fact that everybody thinks they're better than everyone else, and we're probably all really quite good, probably. Because what happens is when you check in later, you think, that was all right, yeah, that was a reason. What I'm seeing is a good job, or nothing's happened, so I might get in contact just to say, sort of, you know, how's it all going? And it will be, yeah, fine. There are a couple of occasions where we've rescued people, but they're rare. I think most of the time people get what they want and what they need.
It's so much better than kind of going in. You never know. Things come back, don't they? And it is very dangerous to sour the relationship of something that could potentially turn into something good further down the line. And we've had that, you know, at Headscape. We've had clients come back to us.
Yeah.
And, you know, or we've lost work, and then later on it's turned out, you know, it turned into something. So you never really know.
No, exactly. Just be professional. Don't, even if you're kind of chewing the side of your face off to stop yourself saying something, just keep doing it, because it will come back and bite you.
Yeah.
If any time I've ever gotten the least bit snarky, you know, somebody just strung me along, and then they're like, oh, you know what, we're just going to keep it in-house, or whatever. And that is, it's annoying. It is annoying. It happens to everyone. But if just walk away from the email.
Yeah.
Do answer them the next day.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, we were talking previously about, you know, responding to RFPs, writing proposals, doing pitches. These are other podcasts in this series. And you will write a proposal where you're just making up the numbers. I mean, I'm pretty good these days at recognizing when I'm being asked to make up the numbers, so I decline gracefully. But some, I know there'll be situations where I'm just making up the numbers, and you've just got to accept it. That's life, and move on.
It is mm-hmm. Indeed. Okay, I think we will draw that to a close there. Have we got, just have a quick final look through the questions. No, actually, I want to do this last one because this is something that has happened to me in the past, well, me as in Headscape, which is, how do you prevent yourself from getting lazy with long-term clients and just falling into a routine? Because we got accused of that, didn't we, once, I remember, Marcus.
Did we?
And I think it was you do not remember?
You have to remind me.
It was with, well, I might as well say, it was with Wiltshire Farm Foods that we
worked
with.
Oh, I didn't work on that one, so that's
fine. Oh, well, that's not, oh, it wasn't you
that's
then.
That's why I don't know about it.
Yeah, because obviously.
That's probably why it happened.
Yeah, exactly.
If you'd been involved, it would have all been fine, wouldn't it?
We want more cash lunches.
Yeah, so, basically, yeah, the same answer to the previous question, take people out to lunch. There you go. Chat to them.
Is that your answer to everything, Marcus?
Meet them, talk to them. Simple things. But, you know, it's bound. Long-term relationships are bound to become a bit routine-like because you kind of tend to be doing similar work over and over again. I guess the not lazy approach would be to kind of proactively look for continually come up with ideas about how their website, which 99 times out of 100 it would be a website in our case, could be improved. And I guess there's doing that for every single client when you've got loads of new stuff on, you're probably not thinking about that maybe as much as you could be. So that's the lazy word in there that I guess I'm a bit guilty of, but I probably could be spending more time thinking about how our clients, previous and current, you know, could be doing things better and providing recommendations. I probably could do more of that, definitely.
I think there's also, is there not a kind of element here of asking the client? You know, because if they get to the point where they're saying to you, you know, I'm unhappy, with the situation, then it's almost too late. You know, they've got really, really frustrated. You know, because it takes quite a lot to turn around and say, "You're shit, I'm really unhappy with things." You know, you've got to a bad place. But if you're kind of every now and again, you make a point of having almost like a retrospective with the client where you sit down with them and you say, okay, you know, how are things going? Are you happy with the relationship? Is there stuff that we could do that would be better? You know, I think that that kind of just shows a certain level of caring and keeps you on your toes as well. Right. I'm going to stop at that point. I think we've done enough for today. So let's, before we wrap up, quickly talk about Lynda. I'm really excited to be talking about Lynda.com this week because I finally win, right? So
what?
I finally win in my, don't you remember my Lynda.com competition? I've got this thing, Jonathan, right? Where whatever topic we talk about on the show.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right. I go and see whether they've already covered it. Okay, and they always have. They've always got a video on whatever the subject is, right? But this week they haven't. It's great. They've done nothing at all on nurturing repeat business. Not one video could I find. I found loads of videos on sales, loads of videos on customer service. They've got over 3,000 on-demand video courses, not even individual videos, video courses on business, creativity, technical stuff, all kinds of things. But they don't have anything on nurturing repeat business. So boo sucks to you, Lynda.com. That's not how you're supposed to do sponsorship slots. But they are great. Check them out. A great place to learn new skills, whatever that skill may be. They've got thousands and thousands of streaming video courses on demand that you can watch at your own schedule. Those courses are made up of lots of different individual videos, so you can kind of pick and choose and work when you want to. Lots of bite-sized pieces. All of it's available for a flat fee. There's a 10-day free trial that you can get if you go to lynda.com/BoagWorld. And that is about it for this week's show. Marcus.
Thank you to Daryl again. Sent me about 10 jokes. I think I can use one of them. maybe two. So this is a short and sweet joke for this week.
Okay.
Which I kind of like. I went to the library and found a medical book on abdominal pain, but somebody had ripped the appendix out. That's pretty good. Come on. Wow. What do you want?
I love it.
It was okay.
It was okay.
There was one that you mentioned in Slack that you were going to say.
It was that one.
Was it that one?
Yeah.
It was funnier in Slack.
Yeah, it's a written down joke. You never know till you say them out loud. You think, oh, it doesn't really work when you say it.
It's the way you say
it. Yes, it could be that. Could be. Yeah, it is that, yes.
So, anyway, that's it for this week's show. A huge thanks, Jonathan, for coming on the show. It's Indeed. Always great to have you, even though we never talk about what we're supposed to.
Anytime. I love coming on.
Did you notice how animated the conversation was when we were talking about what we were not meant to be talking about?
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Just the way of things. Well, next time I get you on the show, Jonathan, we're not going to have a subject, and we're just going to see where it goes.
I'm up for it.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us, dear listener, and join us again next week when we will be looking at growing your business. But for now, goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.